Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Everything Blue Jays, everything baseball. Baseball Central on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
All right, welcome to Baseball Central for July 2nd. 2015. Happy day after Canada Day.
Happy July.
Happy July. An early happy 4th of July to you, Mr. Barker.
Can you imagine it's July already?
Yeah.
Man, it's flying by.
Really?
No?
No.
All right. It is for me, I think.
The season seemed the season seemed fast.
Long.
The season seemed
long. I don't think
so.
I think it seems like it was just spring training.
Well, anyhow. Your Toronto Blue Jays. Speaking of long. Went deep and long with shocking frequency yesterday in an 11-2 win over the Boston Red Sox. Edwin, a three-run homer in the first. Justin Smoke, a two-run homer in the first. Jose, a two-run homer in the second. Smoke again, a solo homer in the third. And with a win tonight in the fourth and final game of this four-game series, the Jays can get a sweep. Or, I'm sorry, they can get a sweep. They can get a split of the Boston Red Sox, and the Jays are right now one game out in the American League. It's an odd division in that everybody got hot at the same time, and everybody seems to have cooled down a little bit at the same time. So there are four teams. There's a game separating the top four teams in the American League East. When you look back at that game, and we'll be joined, by the way, by John Gibbons, later on in the show. When you look back at that game, Kevin, a couple of things we talked about off air, and Joe Siddle on the radio broadcast really hammered this point home. Talk a bit about Rick Porcello's approach in that first inning.
He didn't have one.
He threw. Now, look, I assumed he was going to try to pitch around Edwin. Well, you don't do that by throwing a freaking changeup down a
He fell behind 3-0, he threw a fastball, basically, I think, right down the middle, and then he throws him a changeup right down the middle. That's terrible pitching. Any way you want to shake it, you don't – I'm not real sure they were trying to pitch around him. I think he wanted to make a really good pitch and get a pretty good power hitter out, and he made a terrible pitch. We always talk about get beat with your best pitch. Is Rick Porcello's best pitch a changeup?
You might think it is.
Well, not anymore. Now, what'd that get you? 2 1/3 or three?
It was bizarre the whole inning. And look, the Jays are a good hitting team, and they were due to bounce out of it or to break out of it. So I don't want to take anything away from them. But the approach in general on the part of Porcello was amateur.
I mean, he was throwing 94-mile-an-hour sinkers, and why not keep throwing that? I think that was Siddle's point. That's my point. Is, you know, obviously he didn't have the feel for anything. He was searching for something, and that something was throwing changeups down the middle to two guys that hit the ball in the next area code. That's probably not what you want to do, you know, with a packed stadium when your team's struggling. And yeah, just that's having a bad approach. It's going against a team that, you know, if you make good pitches to the Blue Jays, you can get them out. It's basically baseball. You make good pitches to a really good hitting team. Good pitching beats good hitting. That is just not having a good plan and leaving balls out over the middle of the plate and up and just getting backlegged like crazy. Hey, you're a Blue Jays fan, you want to stand up and clap for Rick, don't you?
Absolutely.
I appreciate you throwing two changeups.
He might have been your best player in some ways.
Two changeups down the middle.
And Josh Donaldson, of course, added a two-run shot later on in the eighth inning. And as we said, the Jays are game back in the American League East. Mark Burley, 4 hits and a run, 7 strikeouts over 7 innings. He's like Old Man River, just keeps going and going and going. But I want to talk, and we're going to talk to John Gibbons about this as well, Kevin. I want to talk about Justin Smoke and about what Justin Smoke brings to this lineup. And mm-hmm. and it's look, we understand the situation with Edwin and Deonner Navarro. I mean, it's hard to get guys at bats. But one of the things when Jose Bautista went back to right field, one of the things we were told is, well, this is good because it'll allow John Gibbons to get Justin Smoke back in the lineup, mm-hmm. get his defense back in the lineup at first base as well. And poor Justin Smoke. I mean, he needs a crowbar to find any action in this lineup. But he seems to be making the best of it. And you watch his approach now. He's almost at the point where when he comes up, I expect a home run. And I know it's not like he's at 100 this year.
Wow.
But I expect him to put the ball in play. I expect a home run.
He has swagger. When I talk to him at the field early, when I'm there, he's out hitting early. You know, guys that don't play have to come show up earlier than everybody else and get their swings in and do the things they have to do. But he has swag. He walks around like he knows he's good. And there's something to that for a guy that doesn't play a whole lot and has to go about a job differently than the guy that plays every day, because it's very hard to do. It's very hard to stand over there and not be in the game so much as everybody else and warm up differently and trying to stay in. You know, if I hit two innings from now against this guy, how do I get loose? How do I figure out how to hit a fastball that's 98 miles an hour because everybody coming out of a pen is throwing that hard? I just think it's swagger. I think he has a lot about what a lot of young guys search for that doesn't, you know, a lot of young guys come up to the big leagues and they're not everyday players. Mm-hmm. Need to watch how he goes about every day, just how he walks around on the field. It's, you know, you have to have that playing baseball, because baseball, you hit a round thing. It's very, very hard to do. If somebody's never tried to do it, especially guys that throw this hard and guys that have nasty breaking balls and change ups and split fingers, and it's very hard to do, and to watch him do it and to watch him do it before he gets to the games is very impressive. I've been there. I've seen him do things just by, you know, him hitting balls in that fourth deck. I see him doing that in batting practice at 3:15 when they show up early when nobody's there. It's not a surprise to me, and it's like you said, you kind of expect it now.
The series will wrap up tonight with Matt Boyd, the rookie, on the mound making his second start for the Blue Jays. Wade Miley, who was 7-7 with a 4.38 ERA in his 0-2 and a couple of career starts against Toronto. He will get the call for the Boston Red Sox. And well, I'll tell you, I'd really like to keep if I'm an opponent, I'd love to keep my left-handers away from the Jays. I mean, I know you can't. Your rotation's wow. Rotation. I'd love to keep my left-handers.
This sets up very well for the Jays.
Yeah, it really does.
Well, the Red Sox are 28th and hitting lefties. They hit .226. They're .364 in slugging, .280, .298 and OBP, .662 and OPS. That's not very good.
No.
And the Blue Jays hit .306, .371 OBP, .495 slugging, .865 OPS. Good luck.
I mean, if you're the Jays, you like the way this is setting up. Of course, we kind of like the way the whole series was setting up, and for the first couple of games, we didn't see that. What was the difference, do you think, yesterday, in the Jays' approach, or was there a difference in the Jays' approach yesterday compared to the two previous days? And how much of what we saw yesterday, Kevin, was just down to Rick Porcello not pitching well?
I think that too, but again, you have to say you still have to hit it. Mm-hmm. Regardless of where the guy's throwing it, you still have to hit it. I think the Jays were aggressive. They were going to take it to the Red Sox. First couple of games, they weren't doing that. They were a little passive, and they looked flat to me. I'm interested to ask John Gibbons that. They were looking to me like they were a little flat. They were letting guys go first to third. They were letting guys tag up at second base on a little bit of lazy getting balls in from the outfield. It's not something, you know, it's not what we're accustomed to seeing from the Blue Jays. And yesterday I just saw they were taking it to the Red Sox. It looked to me like they said enough's enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're coming here. We're one of the best teams at playing at home. We're going to take it to you. And I think that's what you saw. The best offense in baseball beat up sort of on a team right now that's struggling. And mm-hmm. that's what you do at home.
Jose Bautista's home run, by the way, ended in 0-for-25. Sliding. It was
aggressive first pitch
swing, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, he looked like he's out in front of the leg kick. That's the That's the with the leg kick. You know, as you're going to go 0 for 25s because guys figure out ways to pitch to you. It's like Josh Donaldson. Now everybody's throwing him up because whenever you do a leg kick, that leg kick makes that head move. When your head moves, the ball moves. Mm-hmm. Everything up looks like it's right down the middle. And you see Josh Donaldson swinging at balls that they look like they're right down the middle and they're up. That's the leg kick. That's the why nobody wants to do it.
It's Baseball Central with Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker and Sportsnet 590 The Fan and 360. By the way, that was the 14th time this year that the Blue Jays reached double digits in runs. 14th already. And it's July 2nd. It's their most since 2009. They had 14 all year in 2009. So this offense continues to just roll.
Yeah,
they scuffled in the four or five games before yesterday. The question now is, what do they do against Wade Miley? Again, a left-hander. This, you'd think this would be in their wheelhouse, so to speak. But what do you do against Wade Miley if you're the Blue Jays?
Well, I think you have to be aggressive. Why do anything differently than you did yesterday? It's, you know, go out and get a good pitch to hit. You're facing a team that's struggling. They're struggling because they're not playing real good defense, and they're not doing all the little things to win games. So what you do is you go up, get a good pitch to hit, whether it's the first or the fifth, put a good swing on it, and then be aggressive. Be aggressive on bases. Make that team throw you out. Go first to third. Go second to home. Do things to put pressure. Let that team beat themselves, mm-hmm. meaning the Red Sox. And, you know, the Blue Jays are a great team at home. They have to win games like this coming off a high yesterday. Come into today and just, you know, do what you do best, which is beat up left-handers and have some fun. Baseball's meant to be fun. They do that. But I think, again, we have to – you mentioned Mark Burley. We have to mention a little bit more about Mark Burley, I think. Every time, it's just real funny to watch him pitch when he gets a lead. Mm-hmm. You know, he works quick when it's nothing, and when he's behind, he works the same. But it just looks to me like he's different. When he has a lead, whether it's 1-0, 5-0, 10-0, he's going right after guys. There's no more messing around. There's no more, flipping, breaking balls and things. I'm going in and out with the heater. I'm going up and down with it. I may flip you a first-pitch breaking ball just to show it to you. Mm-hmm. But here comes – and he gets looking third strikes. That's very impressive from a guy that throws 83 miles an hour. It's because he sets it up by throwing fastball away. He just gets you bored if you're a hitter. When you cut, really, that's what it is. He bores you to death, and then he throws you an 83 in that looks 96, and you're throwing your hands up, taking it, and, you know, you sort of look silly because the guy just made you look silly on 83.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting too, and it kind of gets lost a little bit in all the talk about the offense. But Mark Burley made the point in a piece that Shai Davidi has up on the Sportsnet site after the game that he said he threw 10 pitches in the bullpen. He said, "I looked back at Pete Walker and I told him I was ready."
Mm-hmm.
Look, crowd noise, active crowds, all that stuff. I've always kind of believed that it doesn't. You know, baseball's a one sport where crowd noise really doesn't matter because if you're throwing 95, you're throwing 95. I mean, mm-hmm. I've always kind of underestimated it. But it was pretty clear that the Jays were amped up and fed off. And I'm not one of those people who gets big into chemistry and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But you could tell just looking in the dugout, some of the camera shots of the dugout before the game and when Mark Burley came up, you could tell those guys were amped up.
It was fire. Well, how would you not be? You'd have it's such an exciting day. I've been in days like that when I was in winter ball and in the playoffs and winter ball, and it's people standing on top of the roof and mm-hmm. yelling and just you can't hear yourself think. But I'll bet you if you ask Mark Burley, you sat down and ask him, I bet he doesn't hear a word of that. Because mm-hmm. when you get zoned in and you just go out there and he's done it so many times and knows pitched in so many huge spots, I bet it's just like second nature. I'm getting the ball. I'm going to throw whoever's telling me to throw it, and I'm going to throw it to that spot, and I'm going to let guys get themselves out.
One of the things Justin Smoke said after the game, and I found this intriguing as well, is that one of the things he's tried to do to sort of acclimate to this new role is try not to take too many swings. He talks about you know, you can get caught up in the cage, especially here at home. Mm-hmm. You can take a swing after swing after swing during the game. I mean, you got nothing to do. Go swing in the cage.
Right.
And you really, it's interesting hearing a guy say that you kind of have to, you have to put the shackles on that a bit, mm-hmm. and you have to just accept the situation and kind of structure how you stay ready according to that situation.
Yeah, more is not always better. It's just like Mark Burley, you mentioned. He's done it so many times, 10 pitches is enough.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to a cage and you take 10 swings and all 10 of those swings, you lay out lineas to right field, why take 11 swings?
The manager of the Toronto Blue Jays is John Gibbons, and we're very pleased to have John Gibbons join us for his weekly segment on Baseball Central. How you doing, John?
Hey, Gibby.
Oh, he's doing good. What are you guys talking about?
You.
You.
Me. Great
you know.
Day.
Well, it's pretty hard not to be in a good mood after beating the hated Red Sox 11-2, John. One of the things I wanted to ask you, because a lot of focus yesterday, obviously, in Burley and the home runs, but Jose Reyes he's probably playing his best stretch of offensive baseball right now since he's been with the Jays. I mean, there have been other spurts, but he just seems to be at the center of everything going on with this team right now offensively. What are you seeing from him? Is there been a change in approach? Or, John, is he just healthier and feeling better now at the plate?
You know, Jeff, I think he's just healthier, really. You know, he's been banged up since he's been here. And he's played through a lot. You know, a lot of stuff people don't realize. But really, he's our catalyst. But I will say, you know, he's at his best, you know, when he's using the whole field. Primarily, I'm talking about from the left side. You know, yesterday he was shooting some balls up the middle. That's when you know he's locked in, and you know he'll flip some balls to the left occasionally, things like that. And then you know you got to be careful with him too. Now he's got some strength, and he can burn you deep,
mm-hmm.
you know, at times. But you know he's really a dynamite offensive player, and you know he just you know the I think the focus of our team, you know, over the last couple of years, especially this year, has always been the guys in the middle. But Reyes really makes a go.
Gibby, you know, obviously I don't need to tell you this. You have one of the best offenses in baseball. But entering yesterday, you'd scored 3 runs or fewer in 6 out of your last 7 games. As a manager, knowing that, I know you knew that already, but knowing that going into a game, is there anything you do? Do you feel like on occasion you need to go in and throw something in the clubhouse? Or do you just find yourself writing out the lineup and saying, I do have the best offense in baseball and they'll figure it out?
Yeah, that's really the way you have to approach it. You know, we ran into some good pitching, and you know, naturally, you know, some hitters are going to cool off a little bit. And we had a few guys at once. You know, Batista had cooled off a little bit. Josh Donaldson, you know, wasn't getting a lot of hits. I mean, he was hitting a lot of balls on the money. Had nothing to show for it. And you know, Colabello a little bit. So that Eddie, you know, I mean, that's kind of the way the game works. You know, at this level, I think we spoiled a lot of people. You know, mm-hmm. they go out there every night thinking we're going to score 7 or 8 runs. That's not going to happen. And some nights, you know, the guy on the mound for the other side is pretty damn good. So, you know, I think it was just kind of one of those waited out. We knew it was going to happen. It's never easy to score double digits, especially at this level. But we've kind of done it on regularity, and which is you know, can be shocking.
We're joined by manager John Gibbons on Baseball Central. Kevin and I spent a lot of time before you joined us talking about Justin Smoak. And I was making the point just how impressed I have been with the way he has adapted to the situation he's found himself in. And I found it interesting, John, because he made a point talking to Shai Davidi that one of the things that he's kind of realized is that because of his role right now, he does have more downtime than he has in the past. And he said, you almost got to remind yourself that you can do something else besides go in the cage and swing. You know, he said, you almost have to cut down how much you swing and give yourself, you know, a little bit more of a mental break. How tough of an adjustment has that been for Justin? Because I know you've talked about it a lot. Look, you've been trying to find ways to get him in the lineup. I mean, you talk about it almost every day, trying to right. find ways to get this guy in the lineup.
Yeah, JB, you know what, I'd love to throw him in there every day. You know, there's a lot of guys on this team you'd love to throw out there every day. And, you know, he had a huge day yesterday. you know, it makes it even more impressive is, you know, he's been sitting around for the last couple of weeks with, you know, limited playing time. And, you know, that's the way it goes, sometimes. Even tonight, you know, they have Miley going the left-hander, and we have our left-handed lineup, which is pretty damn good, you know. And, you know, so he's not going to start the game tonight. But I'm definitely going to get him in there more often. You know, when you do things like yesterday, you know, that you deserve some of that. And it kind of shows, too, maybe you're about to enter a nice little groove. So we'll see. But there's a lot of guys. You know, he's handled like a true pro. It's not easy to do from a manager's end. You know, but there's other guys that have been swinging it well, too, and some guys that are really our regulars. But I think it's smart what you just mentioned, what he said. Sometimes, you know, if you got all that dead time, you know you're not in the lineup, and sometimes you can work yourself to death and you almost just put yourself in a slump by overswinging. And, you know, as long as you feel good, go in the cage, take a few swings, you feel good, that's all you need. But, I mean, that's tough for guys to do sometimes. You know, some guys have to hit and hit and hit until they feel just right, and that's kind of the security blanket. But it really kind of shows he's coming into his own, you know, through experience. And, hey, I don't need that much. Let me just get fine-tuned here a little bit. I'm ready to go.
John, as a manager, what tells you that a guy is ready to get in one of those grooves? You know, I've heard guys talk about it, not just the fact that, hey, he hit two home runs a day before. That's a pretty damn good groove. I mean, you don't have to be, Einstein to figure that out. But as a manager, what do you look for that tells you, okay, this guy's just about ready to go off?
You know, Jeff, it's usually the timing thing. You know, even like you talk about like Josh Donaldson, even Batista. I think Ozzy was 0-for-20-something, and it didn't feel like that to me, because he was squaring a lot of balls up. Same way with Josh Donaldson. A lot of times when they're off, you know, they're out front rolling over balls, or they're getting beat inside, things like that. And when you're an everyday player, I mean, you can get fatigued. You know, the schedule can get to you. You know, you get a little bit worn down, what have you. But there's, I don't know if I can necessarily describe it, but it's just the quality of the at-bat, whether, you know, a guy can even go up there and strike out. But if he's on every pitch, you kind of get a good feeling from our end right here. But, yeah, he hit those two home runs yesterday, so maybe he's already in that groove. I just missed it a few days ago.
Yeah, now, Gibby, we always talk about Mark Burley and what he brings, but we read a little funny thing that says he said that he threw 10 pitches yesterday and turned around and told Pete Walker that I'm ready to go when he was warming up in the bullpen. Does the things that Mark Burley do just start to be second nature to you now that you're writing up a lineup and you're going through pitchings and pitchers and you're going, well, every 5 days this guy here, I'm just not even going to think about him anymore because I know what he brings. Is it nice to know that every 5 days that you have a guy like Mark Burley going for your team?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's a special guy, but he's different. You know, he's coming. He's at the point in his career, too. I mean, he knows he's got to conserve. You know, I mean, he had a long season. He's getting up there in age. He chalks up a lot of innings every night and every year. So by him throwing, like you said, 10 pitches yesterday, that doesn't surprise me at all, because all he really wants to do is get loose. You know, he's not a guy that goes down there. I got to find those corners. Everything's got to be right before I take the field. No, he's just going down there to get a little blood flow and, you know, feel good a little bit. So if it takes 10 or 20, that's probably all he's going to do. And, you know, you start to notice those things, I guess, his first year here, about halfway through with Burrow. You know, I'd seen him on the other side as an opponent, but now when he's on your own team, yeah, I mean, he does things differently, and he's got such tremendous confidence, and you know, he just takes the field and lays it out there, good or bad, he deals with it, and you know, it's fun to watch, and it's very comforting as a coach and a manager to, you know, hey, this guy is reliable every 5 days. It doesn't mean it's going to be good every time, but you know what, he's going to give you what you need.
What does Matt Boyd need to do today to take that step, continue to take those steps forward?
Do what Burley did yesterday.
Okay, well, that's easy enough.
I don't. He might throw more than 10 pitches.
I was going to say, is there something that he can take away from watching how Burley attacked the Red Sox?
Oh, yeah, Jeff. You know, it's funny you say that. I was talking to him in the lunch line yesterday after the game, and I said, watching Burley, did you get anything from that? And he said, oh, yeah. And you know, I was talking about it. I think the big thing he can take from it is, you watch Mark. He never comes out of his delivery. You know, he's never really reaching back for anything extra. And that's what gets a lot of guys in trouble. You know, they think they have to do more than they're capable of. And sometimes guys try to add a little more velocity, and that can backfire on most guys. And I said, yeah, and watch him too. He never panics, and it is really his attitude. Mark's is that, you know, if I'm on, I'm going to get you out. If I'm not, you know, you're probably going to get me, and I'll move on. Mm-hmm. And I said, and I told him that's a tough mindset to acquire, and usually that takes a little bit of time. But I said, you know, you watch how relaxed he is, and he has fun out there. That's a big part of this game, and some guys have trouble with that. But you know, it's a perfect guy for Boyd to watch. There's really a lot of similarities. They're strike throwers, things like that. You know, different stages of their careers, of course. And Boyd's just hoping to, I'm sure, come close to what Mark's accomplished. But it's a perfect guy for him to watch here. You know, these next few weeks or however long he's here.
We know that Alex Anthopoulos went down to watch Daniel Norris pitch yesterday. Norris, 7 innings, 6 hits, 6 runs, 4 of them earned, 2 walks, a strikeout against Buffalo. What are the plans for Daniel Norris? I'm sorry, against Gwinnett. What are the plans for Daniel Norris right now?
Jeff, not sure just yet. We'd love to get him back. You know, I think he pitched better than yesterday than that, you know, 6 runs indicate. Mm-hmm. I think the defense was a little bit sloppy, and it, the whole idea when, of course, when we brought Boyd up, you know, when Daniel comes back, we think he's ready. You know, you want him to stay. You don't necessarily want one of those, you know, come up and send him back down. Now that could happen. I know we've talked about in this on this next road trip. You know, if we feel like the starters are fatigued, mm-hmm. you know, we might sneak somebody in for a spot start to give him that extra day. And Daniel could be that guy. And if that's the case, you know, it might end up being a one-shot deal, and he goes back down. But ideally, when he comes back, you want him to stay, and he can just take off from there. So, but it's consistency. You know, his last few starts have been much, much better. That's really what we were looking for. I know he's probably been a little bit frustrated by the progress, but, you know, he's moving in the right direction. And, he made a huge jump coming to the big leagues last year, you know, and starting the season with us. He's actually right now probably where he should be. So that's it's really the struggles he goes through up and down a little bit down there in AAA now are probably the best thing for him. And, it should make him better.
John, tonight you play your 81st game, halfway point of the season. We asked Alex this question earlier this week when he was on about it. Did he finally feel that this is kind of this is the team he was building towards having? I got to ask you, is this the most comfortable you've been with the Blue Jays team? All the Blue Jays teams you managed, is this like you look at this team and go, this is it? This is a team.
Yeah, you know what? I can honestly say that. You know, but I had a good feeling early on in probably that first week of spring training that I thought, mm-hmm. I thought there was something different about this team. Plus, I can say that because, we're still in this thing in July. I can't remember us ever being in that position in the last, I don't know how many years.
This is true.
Yeah, I mean, that can go a long way there. Jeff, there's something different about this team. I'm not just talking talent-wise, things like that. You know, it's really kind of grown into a tight-knit group. You know, some people buy into that. Some people think that doesn't matter, but you know, having been around here over the years, in my opinion, it's definitely helped. Okay, and then one thing they really do is they push each other. Mm-hmm. There's really no let up. Even times, you know, the last few games we've been struggling, this and that. You know, they keep coming at you. We don't always get the results we want. Nobody ever does. But there's just something different in the mindset of these guys. And you know, there's some areas that, we may upgrade along the way and like other teams are trying to do. But, you know, I feel very good about this team, and so we'll play it out and see where it takes us.
John, it was great to join us today. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Gibby.
All right, boys. Always a pleasure.
It's John Gibbons, manager of the Toronto Blue Jays. He almost sounded like he meaned it that time.
Did he? Yeah. He sounds like he's in a good mood.
He should be.
He's got a good team.
Got red meat out there tonight, Wade Miley. It's like Toro. It's like dangling the cape in front of the bull. Having said that, of course, they'll probably shut out the Blue Jays.
I wouldn't bet on it.
By the way, kind of a cool day in baseball today. Jose Fernandez, a couple of real good young pitchers. Jose Fernandez of the Miami Marlins and Matt Moore of the Tampa Bay Rays, both making starts after surgery, their first starts after surgery. Jose Fernandez right now is down 2-0 to the San Francisco Giants. They had all sorts of base runners on against him in the first inning. So that's kind of it's going to be an interesting story today. Matt Moore joining the Rays. I'll tell you what, the disabled list may be the disabled list for the Rays. That may be the trade deadline for the Rays, because they're, I'll tell you what, whatever Alex Anthopoulos does, I don't, or any of the other GMs in the American League East do, I don't think anybody's going to get an acquisition as good as Matt Moore.
Nope.
I would be surprised. So anyhow, big day for those two teams. Jose Fernandez back on the mound for the Miami Marlins, and Matt Moore will be on the mound for the Tampa Bay Rays as well. The whole baseball world is still talking about what the hell is going on with the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. Jerry DePoto stepped down as general manager of the team yesterday. It took a while for the organization to formally announce that, in fact, Jerry DePoto was stepping down. He's clearly lost a power struggle with Mike Socha. Now, the question is, this has been kind of painted as old school baseball guys, i.e. Socha, beating the hell out of the new sabermetric guys, i.e. Jerry DePoto. And that could be the case, or frankly, it could be that Mike Socha just acted like an ass, you know, as a couple of people pointed out on Twitter. Yeah, it's great. The GM has to have the manager's back, but sometime the manager has to have the GM's back as well. Jeff Passan of Yahoo Sports has written a terrific piece on the situation with the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, and Jeff Passan will join us when Baseball Central with Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker continues on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 360.
Jeff Blair loves to commute. Let him join you on yours. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now, back to more Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome back to Baseball Central.
You're something else.
I truly am, aren't I? God, July 2nd, Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker.
Do I have to buy a can of spray for this place? It's amazing.
Oh, God.
Damn, I tell you, it's
we gotta have you do your pre-show ritual on TV sometimes.
So well, people if you keep can doing
see
that,
you, people could see where
you keep doing what you just did during commercial. I will be doing it. It will be done.
It will indeed be done. Just mentioned, by the way, Jose Fernandez again on the mound for the Miami Marlins against Matt Cain. He's also making his season debut. So lots of interesting pitching matchups today. Three hits so far given up by Jose Fernandez. And just interesting little give and take with the umpire here. One of the weirdest, well, I don't know, weird. Nothing's really weird anymore, I guess, in baseball. But the situation with the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim is kind of, I guess weird is a word. They've got, I mean, on the one hand, you've got a manager who's pretty widely respected and is really old school. On the other hand, you have a general manager, or I should say you had a general manager who was really widely respected himself. And, you know, like a lot of general managers, was certainly not an old school guy. You know, of course, by now that Jerry DePoto stepped down as general manager of the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim yesterday, essentially saying that he was doing it in the best interest of himself. And after reading what Jeff Passan wrote on Yahoo.com about the Angels situation and what other people have written, it's pretty hard not to side with Jerry DePoto. And I find that odd. And we're joined by Jeff Passan of Baseball Central. Jeff, I think a lot of people, their first instinct anytime there's something between a manager and the GM is to almost automatically side with the manager. It's just the way a lot of us are wired. But the more you read and the more you kind of get a sense of how this thing played out, Mike Socha comes across as being just a real bully, doesn't he?
Yeah, that's how he's run this organization for 16 years. I mean, the power dynamic in baseball has shifted.
Mm-hmm.
It shifted distinctly over the last decade, where it used to be the Bobby Coxes and Tony La Russas and Mike Socias of the world essentially ran their organizations. That's not how it works anymore. Like, the general manager is the most powerful person in 29 organizations today. And the only place where that does not happen is in Anaheim right now. And you know what? Maybe that's a good thing for Anaheim, that it's bucking the trend. But, you know what, I guess probably 28, because, you know, speaking of bucking, Buck Showalter more or less runs the Orioles.
Mm-hmm.
But the point being that, you know, to run Jerry DePoto out of town because you're too stubborn to listen to what he has to offer and put it into play is just, I said it in the column, it's Ludism.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, that's what Mike Socha is these days. He comes off as a Luddite, and it's not a good look when knowledge is so paramount, and he's sitting there essentially saying, I know more than your entire front office.
And what I find interesting, too, is, you know, you described the situation last year where Mike Trout, hung up one of those Nerf mini basketball hoops in the clubhouse that came down, hung it back up, came down again. It was Mike Socha, didn't like the idea of a foam ball being tossed around the clubhouse. We've heard about sort of how he dominates the music in the clubhouse. But, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, Jeff, 12 years ago, people were, maybe not 12 years ago, that might be too long, but Mike Socha always kind of had the reputation of the guy who got it. You know, the guy who was able to take a bunch of guys and have a real good clubhouse environment and win in the field. Yeah. And I mean, got you. I can't tell you how many times, you know, JP Ricciardi, when he was GM here, talked about, you know, boy, the kind of the manager you really, the guy you really look at as the manager is Mike Socha. And it's just gone, pear-shaped all of a sudden.
There are three words that that more or less sum up life, but particularly sum up baseball. Evolve or die.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike Socha never got past the fact that he had a clubhouse where Darren Erstad was able to set the tone. I mean, a remarkably hard worker, a guy who demanded respect from everybody
right.
in there.
Right.
Darren Erstad set the tone. Tim Salmon came in and was like the consigliere. Garrett Anderson was there too. I mean, these guys patrolled and policed, and they did it in the, you know, in the form that Mike Socha wanted. And mm-hmm. so everything was all well and good. He still wants that, though, and he doesn't understand that not every clubhouse is going to be that way. You have your distinct personalities. You have your different people. And as a manager, your job is not to mold them to you. It's to mold yourself to them.
Jeff, how does Bill Stoneman do? How does he get this team to back to where it used to be when he was there before they won the World Series in 2002 with him? And it's seems to me like if you're a GM and you're trying to get good players, because I'm sure they're going to try to do something to get something in there to help them, you know, on the offensive side of the ball, scoring runs and things of that nature. How do you get good players to come to a team? I'm sure players on other teams know that this is happening and this is the way the clubhouse, or it's being ran by the manager and things of that nature. How does this is, to me, is going to be a real tough job for Bill to work out from now until the time they get a new GM.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like they're going to open their checkbook this time of year, and it's not like Artie Moreno, frankly, is all that into opening his checkbook, period, except for lavish, ridiculous, overpriced old age purchases.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't distinguished themselves terribly well in the free agent market over the last 2 years with Pujols and Hamilton, even though Pujols is having a pretty damn great year so far, leading the American League in home runs and so forth. The big problem with them, and this is a weakness in an indictment of Jerry DePoto, their farm system sucks.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Sean Newcomb, their number one pick last year, has a chance to be really good. So I don't think he's going anywhere. But beyond that, they don't have a whole lot of chips to play with. I mean, do you go and trade Kyle Kubica, a third baseman who you got from Atlanta this offseason and who could, in all likelihood, replace David Freese as he hits free agency this offseason? Probably not. And so balancing this year and the years going forward, it's a tough act for the Angels to do, especially with the Astros playing as well as they are right now and looking like a legitimate threat to win that division.
So this basically means, Jeff, that Mike Socha's got that long contract, and as you point out, I mean he's the king in Anaheim right now. What do they do as far as the GM goes? Who goes into that position? Do they just I mean there's only 30 GM's jobs, so you know somebody will take it, right? But what are they looking for here?
I think they're looking for somebody who will be subordinate to Mike Socha. I mean, isn't that essentially what you're saying by allowing the resignation of Jerry DePoto, that Mike Socha is the person who runs the organization and your job as GM is to essentially be pushing papers?
Yeah,
I mean that's what the GM job is there right now.
And you know what that says to me? If you get somebody like that in there and you have to make a call on a trade or something like that, I mean that's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, it always is. Well, I mean, when power structures are inverted, it's problematic. It's the case in every sport. I mean, you look at the Cavaliers right now. The Cavaliers are run by freaking LeBron James. Mm-hmm. How backward is that? And
Right. Look,
it helps in some respects. I don't think Kevin Love is re-signing with Cleveland if LeBron James isn't whining and dining and wooing him. But at the same time, when you have a player essentially crapping all over a coach in the huddle, that's never good. And that's exactly what Mike Socha did to Jerry DePoto by not implementing what he wanted. The power structure is such that the general manager is the boss of the manager, and when the manager is completely insubordinate to the general manager, it just neuters them right there.
Mr. Passan, we're going to let you run. Thanks for doing this, as always.
Thanks, Jeff.
But pleasure's mine, boys. Take it easy.
That's Jeff Passan of Yahoo Sports. He's got a terrific column, really sums up the Mike Socha, Jerry DePoto situation well. And, it is... It's kind of odd because it used to be that everybody automatically sided with the manager whenever it was a manager versus GM thing.
I just think it's
the more you read about this, the more you look at Mike Socha, he's just a bully.
Yeah, he couldn't sum. Well, when he said neutered, when you're talking about neutering another guy, well, it's like, seriously, you know, you're trying to run a team. You do your job. I do mine. Mm-hmm. It's not you do both our jobs. No, that's not the way it works here. And when, you know, a manager's sort of saying, well, yeah, it is. That's mm-hmm. the way we do it here. And then, you know what? I feel sorry for a guy like Mike Trout, best player in baseball, has to come out and answer these questions and not do the thing that he does best, which is on field. I answer things that off the field like this. Come on. Clean that up.
The Toronto Blue Jays, by the way, today is the start of the international free agent signing period. A variety of reports that the Blue Jays have, in fact, agreed to terms, signed Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who was considered to be one of the one of the premier international free agents out there. Yes, he is the son of former major leaguer Vladimir Guerrero. So there you go, Vladdy Jr. with the Toronto Blue Jays, and a lot of people really, really high on this kid. So tomorrow we'll try to get a little more information on this, and we'll talk about that a little more. But it's not a surprise; it's been widely reported, for months that the Blue Jays were all over Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And actually, Ben Nicholson-Smith has an article up on the Sportsnet website right now. It's kind of cool. You want to take a look at it. You can see what Vladimir Guerrero Jr. looks like swinging the bat. And yes, indeed, he does remind you of the old man. So, for John Gibbons, Jeff Passan, and Kevin Barker, I'm Jeff Blair. Thanks for joining us today on Baseball Central. Jays Red Sox tonight, 7 o'clock, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and Sportsnet. Jays hit the road after this. Have a great day, everybody.